Hello, boys and girls of Credit Union Land, and welcome to episode 72 of the CU Insight Experience. This episode is brought to you by our friends at PSCU. As the nation's premier payments QSO, PSCU proudly supports the success of more than 1,500 credit unions. My name is Randy Smith. I am one of the co-founders of CUinsight.com, and it is my job on the show to have conversations with the best and the brightest of the credit union community. I get to pick their brains and see if we can't find a few nuggets that we can all learn from. My guest on today's show is Keith Monson. Keith is the Chief Risk Officer of CSI. I really had a blast with this conversation. Who knew risk and compliance could be so much fun? Keith and I had some amazing information to share on the risks that credit unions are facing due to this COVID-19 experience that we're all sharing together, as well as what we can expect to see in the future. We also had a ton of fun talking about leadership lessons and life lessons that Keith has learned along the way. We both shared a few of the pitfalls that we made, coming up, as well as, Keith shared some that he sees young leaders make often. I really appreciated the wisdom Keith was willing to share with us, and I think that there is something that we will all be able to take away and learn from, whether it's we're first-time leaders or seasoned vets in the leadership game. And as always, we wrapped it all up with the rapid-fire questions. This conversation, as I mentioned earlier, was just a ton of fun. I look forward to the time when we can travel around this country again and hope my path crosses with Keith to pick up this conversation in person. So, without further ado, I give you my conversation with Keith Monson. Enjoy. Keith, welcome to the show.
Randall, thanks for having me.
This is some interesting times that we are all living through, but it gives us a lot of different directions to go today. So I was looking forward to this conversation a lot. So again, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Like I said, so many different directions we could go. So I figured to just jump right into it. We have to start someplace. Fraud, both digitally and in person. It seems to be something that I am hearing a lot of talk from credit union CEOs, whether it's, wearing the face masks into the branch or, obviously with everything we're doing digitally. Is this something credit unions are not only going to have to stay on top of, but going forward, is that going to change? And, what are you seeing most, I guess, or what are the most pressing issues you're seeing during this experience we call COVID-19?
Yeah, it's interesting that you ask that, because really for credit unions, even financial institutions for that matter, hearing in regards to, you mentioned, fraud maybe coming into the lobbies or something along those lines, we've always been, no hats, no sunglasses, no shirt, no service type deal. And now you've got members coming into the lobby of credit unions, and you've got to be, aware to identify them from fraud issues and stuff along those lines. So that's a very interesting one, because are you going to ask them to take their, the mask down so that you can see the face? I mean, what identification measures do you have? Rules and regulations just state that you have to, with a reasonable assurance, be able to identify the individual that you're transacting business with. So if you don't know your member, you're going to have policies or procedures how you can do that. But keep in mind, you have to do that equally to everybody. No discrimination. Make sure that you don't, do it for one race or, one group and not another. You got to be very careful about that. And that, doesn't just apply today, but in the years to come as well, too. That's very mindful. Other things, phishing scams. Phishing scams are big. And right now, phishing scams coming from healthcare providers, doctors, saying, hey, we've got this, vaccine that is coming and stuff along those lines. And so, if there's a vaccine, they're not going to send you an email to get it. So don't trust that. And so, you want to make sure that you listen to your healthcare providers, not anything in regards to, getting an email or something in regards to that. They're not going to send that out to you that direction. Other things is something we got to be mindful of as credit unions is phishing scams coming from NCOA or CUNA. You've got these fishers that say, hey, I'm your regulatory body, and then so they've got members that will step up and respond to things. The stimulus checks right now are huge during these current times. And people are saying, hey, for a fee, we can help you get that money quicker. And don't fall for those scams. The government's not going to ask you a fee to process a check in regards to those. But those are a couple of them off the top of the mind that you just need to be mindful of. And it's just like, I call it the mother's intuition. What do you mean mother's intuition? You know, it's just like, well, you and I, we don't give birth. But the thing is, you know, the mother's intuition, they know something is wrong with their kids. And so I always say, you know, it's if the mother has intuition, something is wrong. Something's probably wrong. So, you know, as we're working with individuals, if something smells wrong, you know, be very wary of it.
Just an add-on question for that. Do you have a recommendation on what somebody should do? Say they, like, to be specific to people that work in credit unions, if they get something that seems fishy, their mother's intuition doesn't feel right from the NCUA or CUNA or something like that, is there a best practice on how to, I guess, fish that out, let's just say, to make sure if it's legit or not?
Yeah, you bet. And I'm going to point everybody back to their CIP rules. Under the Bank Secrecy Act and stuff along those lines, we have to have specific guidelines that states, you know, non-documentary, you know, or documentary evidence. And so the credit unions should have performed some form of a procedure or policy that states that, you know, if we can't verify their identity, you should have checks and balances in place. Say, well, what's the last four of your security number? Or, you know, what is your phone number? Or what's your mother's maiden name? But each credit union is probably going to be different in that regard. It's based on the procedures that they have drafted. So that's a great question. You know, go back to what you have identified through that procedure. Yeah.
That you've done in the past. Do you think this is going to change the way that credit unions interact with members going forward?
Oh, yeah, I think it is greatly. What we're seeing already is there's just a significant peak in regards to digital avenues. And so in regards to that, you know, credit unions are probably going to be ramping up, you know, their digital options that they offer to consumers. We've seen a lot of mobile, you know, transactions and stuff along those lines taking place. And so those are the type of transactions, you know, the stimulus checks are being deposited electronically, or the majority are. And so, you know, that digital transformation and how we interact with the consumers, loan applications, you know, how are you identify the, you know, members and stuff along those lines as well too. So it's really going to change how we interact with the members of the credit unions.
Are there any, I guess, you know, new compliance issues that are coming up because of that interaction? I mean, in the past, we did a lot with mobile banking, let's just say, or things, but now we're actually, like you said, loan applications. So there's been some communication, whether it's through Zoom or, you know, I mean, are there new compliance issues bubbling up? How about that?
Well, I go back when President Trump came in, he said he was going to take away two rules and regulations for every regulation that was put in place. And we really haven't seen many of those regulations. We haven't really seen the regulatory relief, but we're seeing new things being incorporated, you know, mainly around the shelter in place. And when you shelter in place, so to your point, one of the things we got to be very aware of, not really necessarily new, but we need to leverage a rule and regulation out there that we've already had access to was e-sign. And I think what's happening is we've taken a hold of the fact that we can see you face to face sitting across the table. But the e-sign act has always been out there where it enables us to get an electronic signature and it's considered good in courts and it's a valid contract. And so how we interact with the customers or, you know, the members of our credit unions might change a little bit. Rules and regulations as we see them coming in. Matter of fact, they've been loosening some of those. So in regards to deferrals or defaults on your loans, you know, NCOA and CUNA have been asking, you know, the credit unions to be mindful. We've got a large percentage of the workforce now that's unemployed, you know, work with them through this time. And so it's more of a lessening of those regulations now as opposed to adding new ones is what we're seeing.
We saw it after 2008, I think even, after 9/11, we saw a lot of changes, maybe not immediate, but we saw a lot. There was a lot of push for regulation then after the fact. Do you think that'll happen again? Or
yeah, most definitely. One of the areas, Randall, that I see coming up in regards to the changes, business continuity planning. Yeah. And in regards to business continuity planning, let's be truthful here. You know, when we do business continuity planning, you know, we work with the front lines and we say, hey, what's going to happen? You know, the earth is ending tomorrow, you know, and And they're like, Keith, this is never going to happen, you know, so throw this down. Well, when you realize something like this and you have an event, an unprecedented event like this, then you look at your business continuity plan, you blow the dust off of it.
Yep.
Say, what are you doing? And you're like, whoa, we missed that. We want to work virtually, but we didn't have VPN for, you know, our employees to utilize. And so I think people are going to go back and they're going to take a look at this and they're going to say, we really have to update our business continuity plans to make sure we're ready for the next event.
You know, when Lisa Brown was on the podcast, she's the CEO of a credit union down in Florida. She was like, my team and I, if there's a hurricane coming, we don't even need to break out the plan. We know what to do, right? She goes, but this one, you say, like, dusting it off. She's like, I knew we had it in there someplace, but we'd not looked at it, right? You know, so it is an interesting thing to think about. And yeah, I'm with you on that. I think a lot of us are going to have to make sure that we're up on how to move through these type of things. Do you think there's something that credit unions need to fundamentally change to stay relevant going forward with all the change and disruption that's happening?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, when you think about it in regards to fundamentally change, you know, I really feel that we as credit unions and financial institutions are on the breaking edge of technology. I mean, we've already got virtual teller machines, you know, interactive teller machines. We're really changing with the times and stuff along those lines. But one of the things that we're going to have to really be mindful of is our digital footprint. You know, the digital footprint, that's it's really going to be huge in how we interact, especially with this younger, the millennial crowd, you know, coming in. They don't like to step foot in, you know, the lobbies anymore. They do everything with the digital front, you know, and it's amazing that the younger generation coming up. And it just, I'm constantly learning. I'm thinking, oh, you know what? I know it all. And then it's just like, boy, they just come in with something new. And I'll share a funny story. I always grew up, and you probably experienced this as well, too. Your parents got the VCR growing up, and it always blinked 12 on it, you know? And I'm just,
absolutely, yep.
What the heck? You know, just set the time and everything. Mom and Dad, like, we have no idea how to do that, you know? That's why we had kids. And but the thing is I'm there now. And
yep. Oh, yeah, no.
The digital footprint at the credit unions is going to be huge in regards to that. You know, taking a look at the capacity that they have on their servers, their core providers, how we interact with third parties, not only just in regards to the products that we offer, but the services that we offer as well, too. I mean, so, you know, going through this event today is really going to be eye-opening for a lot of credit unions and how we interact with members going forward. And so you don't want to miss that opportunity. So, you know, jump on board. You got to get there digitally because the millennial group is going to take us there no matter what.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that. Last question in this section. If we were to sit down a year from now, what are you most proud of that you and your team at CSI have accomplished? You know, I mean, like, break out the crystal ball. You know, what's going to make you happy if you look back on it?
I think just transforming from a smaller business to a larger business, you know, and just showing that we're worthy out there in the industry. And, you know, it's really becoming a very impactful and taking a look at it as a leader of the organization and just seeing how we've grown as an organization and looking back, you know, a year from now it's, you know, just the resiliency of the changing business environment. It's very proud, you know, and you can take a look at it and just you can smile and just say you can enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Absolutely.
And you were part of that.
Hey, well, we appreciate that. I appreciate working with you guys. Second part of the show, the leadership and the life hacks. I enjoy this part. It's why I started the entire podcast, was learning from other smart people. So when I was doing a little bit of background research, you know, on the old interwebs, you have a long history in the compliance side and financial institutions, but what inspired you to take the gig as the chief risk officer at CSI?
That's a great question. First of all, I want to thank you because you assume that I'm smart. So it's.
I've listened to a couple of your webinars. You seem to know what's going on. I was geeked about having you on the show. So
well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I mean, just taking a look at it, my years in compliance are numbered, you know, 25 years, executive at financial institutions, work in Washington, D.C., and stuff along those lines. And I think you saw an evolution from compliance. And when it was beginning in compliance, oh, I jumped on that bandwagon. I wanted to be part of that. And then over 25 years, you know, risk started to come into compliance. And, And the regulators were saying, you need to have a risk-based approach. And so, and I said, whoa, this is a new and upcoming event, you know, a profession. If that's the new thing with the regulators, it's not going to drop like compliance. And so I decided to jump over onto risk because it's new. It's something creative. It keeps the innovativeness flowing in the mind, the creative juices, if you will. So, yeah, I just said I still have compliance reporting to me, so I still get to dabble in that. I love compliance. But risk is very closely related. So that's how I went from compliance to risk. Thanks for asking.
How has that inspiration changed since you made that hop over, since you've been on the job?
This way, I'm still learning. So you know, it's just, it's when you learn, I've heard many people say you're either dying or you're learning.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Hear Coach Holt say that, you know, from the old Notre Dame days and stuff along those lines. And I truly believe that. And it seems like I always learn the hard way, though, and one day I hope that I can get away from learning the hard way and just and seem to be seamless. But you just pick up from it, and you got to dust yourself off and go on to the next event. So.
I am with you on that, my friend. I've said many times I'm the guy who touches the stove and then has to touch it just one more time to make sure it's hot. So how would you describe your leadership style, and has that evolved over the years?
Most definitely. And leadership style is, no one likes to work for a dictator, if you will, or, you know, mm-hmm. a micromanager or anything along those lines. I like to say my leadership style has been collaborative. I like to allow people to spread their wings. And, you know, when you spread your wings and you allow other people to be in there, the main thing is if you think you know it all, you're going to be put in your place pretty quickly. And the thing is, You can also inspire your staff if you say, okay, here's my thought, here's my idea, I'm getting it because of this is a new regulation or this is a new risk, you know, to our industry and stuff along those lines. And everybody's like, yeah, I mean, I see where you're going with it. But if you do this, and it's like, that's great. That's a great idea, Randall. Let's add that into the program. Then your employees feel, you know, involved in the process. They want to work for you in regards to that. So I've just seen a lot of good things, and I've tried to emulate myself off of, you know, other supervisors that I've had in the past as well.
I think we'll probably touch on that here in a couple of minutes, but there's a question that I love asking that I have to right here. And that is, as a leader, is there something your colleagues have heard you say so many times they can finish your sentence?
Well, I've got a couple. In God we trust, everyone else we audit. and then another one is that I like to say is you can't manage what you can't monitor. And so those are two sayings that if I say it in a meeting or something, everybody can finish it. You know, you'll see all your employees lip syncing it by the time you're done.
A question I added the second season was, and I think it's even more timely than it was when I put it in here in January, but like sometimes as a leader, we have to make difficult decisions. They might be unpopular at the time. Is that something that you've always had the ability to do? Is it something that you cultivated over, you know, time to be able to make that tough decision?
That's probably the hardest thing in management is making those difficult decisions. And, you know, it's not going to make, you know, someone happy. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest thing is when you manage or when you lead, you try to make the decisions that impact, you know, the company or the credit union in this case, you know, you impact it. If you're making it for a person or for an individual or for a minority group per se, you're not doing the best for the organization. And so those become the difficult decisions because everybody wants to listen to that. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, you know. Mm-hmm. And the thing is you can't do that. Now, you want to listen to those, but those are difficult. And I would like to say I got them right the majority of the time. But, you know, the thing is you try to always do the right thing for the organization.
Yeah. Is there a common myth about being a leader that you would just want to debunk?
Well, you always have to be right. And I would like to debunk that. I mean, because a lot of people say, well, they're now coming into a leadership role, but I got to show my colleagues that, you know, my decisions are all right, or I'm all knowing. You know, nobody is all knowing. You know, take advice from others. Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. Or, you know, don't be afraid to say that, you know, I failed, or you're right, Randall. You know, it's just, and when you do that as a leader, I think that it just inspires the team and people want to work for you as a leader when you see that. But if you're arguing something that you know you're wrong, it's not going to get you anywhere.
I've mentioned it on the podcast before, one of my first managers out of college, like he said, the greatest answer to a question was, I don't know, but I'll find out for you. And as long as you follow through, everybody's happy. So, you know, I've held on to that. So when you think back, you know, something that kind of goes into what you were just talking about, though, when you think back to earlier in your career, was there a mistake that you made often or that you just see other, let's say, young leaders, you know, as they're coming up, make over and over again?
Yeah, I think my mistake, as you can probably always tell, I'm very vocal. And when we're in a room, I always feel as a leader that I've always got to be the loudest voice out there. And so the thing is people need to hear Keith speak. And I don't know if that's how I got my speaking voice or not. But the thing is it's just, no, I'm Keith speaking. Everybody needs to be quiet. And the thing is, you know, I think my mom always said to me, that's why God gave you two ears and one mouth so that you could listen more than you speak. And I'm sure you've heard that saying before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would tell me. And so as a leader, I like to just, well, advise those upcoming managers to listen. You know, when you and I were growing up, we knew the E.F. Hutton commercial, right? When E.F. Hutton speaks, everybody listens.
Everybody listens, yep.
But what I hear from that is you don't hear from E.F. Hutton. But then when E.F. Hutton speaks, it's meaningful.
Yep.
So my mistake is I always had to speak and never listen.
I share that as well. So maybe that's why I'm having a podcast now. But it's helping me listen more. You guys are the guests. So maybe this comes from mom or someplace else. But has there been a piece of advice or a life lesson that you've just carried with you over your career?
Well, I think I've kind of mentioned to it or I've kind of alluded to it. You know, don't be afraid to say you're wrong. And you know, I always felt when I was kind of as a young leader that you always had to be right. And, you know, that's, I think, my biggest mistake because I'm pretty, you know, driven. And when I get driven, my wife says that I suffer from OCD. So, you know, it's just like, okay, well, I'm right. You know, I'm not going to listen to you. But that's my biggest fault. And I wish I would have listened to others earlier. And so not to repeat myself, but I really think that's my biggest problem.
Yeah, that's a sign of maturity when we can actually realize what it is, right? So, you know, one of the things that I noticed in the first season, and you mentioned it earlier about, you know, taking some of those leadership traits from maybe managers that you had in the past or people that you admired but how many people that were on the show talked about mentors? Did you have mentors or do you still have mentors that you keep around? And how did those, you know, relationships, I guess, shape the, you know, the leader that you are today?
Yeah, very good. Well, kind of alluded to it a little bit ago, too. You know, yeah. I'd like to emulate myself off of some of those leaders that I had before. And so I've had some very strong presidents that you just want to, you know, learn from. And you just want to take the knowledge and just soak it up as much as you can. And one of the presidents that I learned from before just mentioned and says, you know, really what you need to do as a leader is get yourself a mentor. And it was, he's the one that recommended it to myself. And so I says, okay, you recommended, would you be my mentor? Probably a little shocking, but he said he'd be happy to mentor. And so the thing is I've learned the most from him, how he interacted with employees and he just continued to mentor. But he's the one that taught me to have a collaborative working or leadership style with your staff and not afraid to mention his name, but you know, a president, a good friend of mine, Mike Anderson, you know, he's just taught me a lot and I had that, but equally now that I'm not working with Mike and I'm on board here at CSI, I'm really growing and I continue to be mentored by our chairman and CEO, Steve Paulus. And yep. What a great mentor. And I mentioned E.F. Hutton earlier and I'm not a quick learner, obviously, but I talk too much. But, you know, when Steve Paulus speaks, you have a tendency to listen. And he does a great job of listening and speaks very little. But when he speaks, it's very impactful. And I'm really now trying to emulate myself, you know, and pick up a lot of leadership styles, you know, from him as well, too. He's a great mentor. Great mentor.
That's been one that I've been trying to work on. I will say that is listen more. There was a guest last year on the podcast and John Spence and, you know, leadership training. And one of the things he said, he also suffers from what you and I do in that sense. And he was like, repeat the last few words of what they said before you start talking, because they might not have been done yet. You know, he's like, it might just be a pause and you don't need to jump in. And I was like, that's actually, I've actually tried to work that in now more and more. So there's a little hack there about that. Question I've started asking, I know this has been completely blown up here the last couple months, but what is the typical day look like for you, Keith? And if you have that perfect work day, you know, that the elusive perfect day, what does that look like to you?
Well, when I find that perfect day, I'll let you know. But my wife she says that I suffer from OCD. And yep. The thing is, you know, when I get in, I've got to park in the same parking spot. You know, when I go to church, I got to sit in the same pew, and I'm just a creature of habit. So when I come into work, I immediately look up. The first thing I do is I look at the Federal Register. I'm looking at the new rules and regulations that were signed from the day before. You know, I'm taking a look to see how that's going to impact the business. And then, you know, you always have to shut your door, and you just got to sit down and read some of those rules and regulations. And, you know, being in the industry, you need to make sure that you get that out there to, you know, the credit unions, the financial institutions. You know, they're looking for the information. They don't have the resources to gather that information. And so I'm trying to stay on top. First thing in the morning, I don't schedule any meetings, you know, for the first hour or so. I just read, you know, what rules are impacted, what's happening in the economy and stuff along those lines, you know, to give us a reason of why we're receiving those rules. And then, you know, taking a look at, you know, then you've got meetings, you manage individuals. So you've got meetings that we have. We go through the day-to-day business, operational questions will poke up, you know, production questions will poke up, receiving email questions from members and clients, and so responding to their questions. And then obviously taking a look at, I've got day-to-day responsibilities as well too, from a risk function, and making sure that we just keep those things in line. So that's kind of, you know, how everything happens. But a perfect day in Keith's world, I would like to have no complaints. I don't like to work through complaints, but you find out, oddly enough, you find out a lot about your members when you read through the complaints. And then you've got to file those away. I mean, if you can't manage what you can't monitor. And the thing is if you continue to monitor those complaints and then you see a pattern as a risk manager, now you need to be able to work on that and pick it up. Just don't file it away in file 13 or anything. And so, a perfect day is, I'd love to have no complaints, just help individuals solve their problems. And, you know, that would be a perfect day for me.
Before we move on to the last part of the show, if you have a free day, nothing on the calendar, what passions do you have outside of risk and compliance? What do you do to recharge? You mentioned your wife thinks you're a little OCD. So what do you guys do to have fun?
I do 18 real estate appraisals on a fun day. The wall behind me, you can probably see, is golf. But I'm an avid golfer. I like to golf. I really enjoy that. So, you know, on a free day or something along those lines, I like to get out and hit the golf ball around and stuff along those lines. If you're talking about a free day at work, those very rarely happen.
Those don't happen, right? Yep. Nope. I get that completely. Last part of the show, I want to be respectful of your time. The rapid fire questions. The questions are rapid. Your answers don't have to be. So what was Keith like in high school? And do you remember the first time you got into memorable trouble?
Oh, yeah, let's not go there. No, just kidding. Well, quite honestly, I was one of those kids that I mind my P's and Q's. I very rarely got in trouble. But if I was to think about it, I would think my mom never swore. I set the precedence in that. And so what happened is, as a freshman, I was a golfer on the golf team and everything. And so we were in, I think it was literature, and they had a pop quiz. And I wasn't listening very well. You can see I don't learn very quickly. I'm going all the way back to high school. But the thing is I failed that quiz. And the thing is I took it home to mother, and she saw that I got an F on that first quiz, and some choice words came out. Let's just say it wasn't golf.
It wasn't golf.
But the thing is she said, Keith, how are you going to be able to golf if you have an F in a class? And so, not that I got in trouble, but that was a learning lesson for myself in high school. I think just the pace of things, I wasn't really ready for a pop quiz. I failed it. Luckily, I got the grades up. I mean, I was an AB student my whole career, but that's probably the closest I got in trouble in high school. I was really pretty a good kid, if I have to say.
So most of us have somehow one way or another stumbled into our careers. You mentioned golf, you know, your freshman year. What did you want to be when you grew up? when you were younger?
Well, yeah, golf. I wanted to be a professional golfer. Obviously, yep. That was the first thing. I think every kid has, you know, a professional sporting venue of some, you know, form or fashion to do. But I always wanted to be an accountant. I really did. I started out college wanting to be an accountant and stuff. And it's like, whoa, those classes are too hard. You know, I'd much rather be in the gym or on the golf course, not wanting to study that hard. And so then I even thought of maybe even being a teacher and a basketball coach. I was a three sport, you know, golf, basketball, baseball, but basketball's just really inspired me as well too. I like the X's and the O's. And so That's what I wanted to be. So,
did you ever coach or?
Just my kids. I've got two older boys. One is married and one's getting married this fall, but I coached their teams up until high school. But I was a basketball official.
For high school. All right. So that always stayed a part of your life, even while you were doing the compliance and risk. Okay? Yeah. Do you have any daily routines that if you just don't do it, your day feels off?
This will make you laugh, but I've got to park in the same parking spot every day. If I don't park in my same parking spot, I get in here and I get frazzled. You know, what do you do? It's just like, well, that first hour of rules and regulations is it's shot. I mean, like, what am I going to do? So then it takes me a little bit of time to get just unfraveled and stuff. So
I appreciate that more than you know, actually. I organize our refrigerator at home. And this year for April Fool's Day, my partner's son just moved a bunch of stuff around in the refrigerator. So when I woke up, I was like, why is that there? And so I get the OCD side of things sometimes. The random question, what's the best album of all time? That one you can listen to without skipping a song.
Oh, well, there's a couple. I'm going to go back and I grew up kind of a headbanger and stuff, but I like Def Leppard, Hysteria, Queen's Greatest Hits. I love that. Journey's Greatest Hits. And so I like those. I don't know if Journey's that much. That's more classical probably. But, and now I listen to country. But those are three. I mean, you put those in the CD player or something, I could just listen to those nonstop.
I think you're the first to say Def Leppard on the show, and I appreciate that. So I remember that album well. It was one of the first ones I think I actually got. So I'm a reader. Jill and I have a stack of books in our house, and many of those recommendations have come from this podcast. Is there a book that you either think everybody should read, that you've gifted, or that you just think everyone should read?
Yeah, I don't know if everybody should read, but I've gifted it to my employees. I was at a conference, speaking at a conference a number of years ago, and heard a gal speak by the name of Connie Podesta.
Okay.
And Connie Podesta, you may have heard of this, but if you were to describe yourself, your personality, are you a square, you a circle, you a triangle, or you a squiggly? And she's talking about individuals' personalities. And I've been in compliance and risk. And so in compliance, risk, and audit, you have those functions working under you. If you find something that's not working correctly, you have to go to that manager and say, hey, this is not right. You know, the manager's putting on the boxing gloves and stuff along those lines. How do you deal with individuals with those types of personalities? And so Connie Podesta has a book that life would be easy if it weren't for other people. By Connie Podesta. And so I've gifted that to a number of employees when they come into compliance, when they come into audit, when they come into risk, because you're going to need this book, you know, read through the different personality types and it'll help you work with them. So like I say, maybe not for everybody, but yes, as I gift the book, and I may even have it over here on my shelf to tell you the truth. So,
you know what? You're adding to the list. I have not read that book, so I will be jumping over to Amazon when we're done here. As you've gotten older, what's become more important to you? And my favorite part of this question, what's become less important?
Well, it's kind of funny, but golf has become less important. I still love golf, and I really do, but family has become way more important. And, you know, I don't want to make it sound like if I grew up poor or, you know, just needing things, because I didn't. I mean, my family was great, but I always felt I needed to be out doing something, and family just kind of took a back seat. And now having kids of my own, and heck, now they're grown, and you wish that you had them back in the house. And so, you know, what you could do better, I'm going to call it life work balance, not work life balance, but life work balance, because I really find family becoming, you know, more important, and I just want to be actively involved in their lives. Now, don't get me wrong, I was very much involved in my boys' lives growing up as well too, but just, I think I'm just have more of a respect, you know, for life and just, you know, they're getting hopefully have kids and I want to be a grandfather and I want to be a good grandfather. And so, you know, that's becoming more, but if you want to spend time there, you can't spend it, you know, 5 hours out on the golf course.
Not as much at least, right? Yeah.
So more or less, I mean, that's kind of what it is.
There's a question that I didn't send you. When you hear the word success, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Oh my word, success. The first person that comes to mind, I'd say my wife.
Tell me more.
And, you know, just success. How do you define success? I mean, you and I, you know, working kind of in the business world and stuff like that, we identify it by dollars and stuff along those lines. And, you know, I really think that we've got a great family environment. And the thing is, you know, when we were growing up, my wife would work just like you or I, we would work, but then I'd come home and I would expect a meal on the table. And she probably had just as a frustrating day as myself. And then you expect a meal on the table and stuff along those lines. And, you know, she's my inspiration, just the success. I think just her just being able to do that and provide for the family and stuff along those lines while also working full time herself. Oh, my word. I've just got a lot of respect. And so I don't know. Success I define maybe a little differently as opposed to the money. But I've got a lot of respect for her. I think she's been very successful and she's the reason why our family continues to thrive today.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. The reason that is my favorite question and I don't send it in advance is because we all do define success differently. So not everybody has to answer Bill Gates or something, right? So I absolutely love your answer. I think it's one of the perfect way to wrap up this show. I thank you again, Keith, for taking the time today and sharing your story. Do you have any final asks or final thoughts you'd like to share with the listeners to wrap it up?
Most definitely. When you get out there, you know, don't be afraid as members of credit unions, financial institutions alike, to send in comment letters. Washington, D.C. needs to hear what you're thinking about. And, you know, in regards to that, it's just how many times do they write a new rule or a regulation, they give a proposal, and we're just quiet about it. And then we complain, you know, and I would complain about the president of the United States. And my mom would say, well, did you vote?
Like, no, right.
I didn't even vote. Well, then don't complain. Well, you know, we get the rules and regulations and we have an opportunity to comment on those. And I'm liking to just go out there and build a compliance army, if you will. And the fact that when you see a proposal, don't be afraid to read it and issue a complaint out there. And that's kind of work advice, as well, too. But then the other side is don't be afraid to ask for a mentor in your life. Never stop learning. Never stop growing.
Appreciate that as well. So we'll link to everything we talked about today in the show notes. If people have additional questions, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you? LinkedIn, the Twitter machine, email? Do you have a preferred method for people to reach you?
Well, by the distinguished look here, you can see I'm not a millennial. And when you talk about this LinkedIn and the Facebook, I am not a huge user of that. And so email would probably be the best way to get a hold of me. And so, you know, that's, you know, keith.munson@csiweb.com, but email is preferred.
Well, we will link to that as well. Thank you again, Keith, for taking the time today. I hope you have an amazing day and please stay healthy, my friend.
You as well, Randall. Thank you again for having me on the show. Greatly appreciate it.